From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Activists in Chicago are calling for Mayor Rahm Emanuel to resign. It's a long-time demand that has taken on new urgency in light of several high-profile police killings. An anti-violence march on Thursday is being organized by members of the city's Black leadership under the banner of Resign Rahm. Among the protest leaders' demands are justice for police murders, economic investment on the South and West Side, resources for Black-led anti-violence initiatives, and the reopening and repurposing of all of the record 50 Chicago public schools closed by Emanuel. We turn now to a longtime Chicago area activist, Reverend Gregory C. Livingston. He's the president and CEO of the Coalition for a New Chicago, and one of the leaders organizing Thursday's march. Welcome to the program, Reverend Livingston.
Thank you, Sonali. Glad to be here.
So, as I said, the demand for Rahm Emanuel to resign is one that's been around for a long time. Various people have been upset about the lack of his leadership. But particularly on the issue of police violence, he seems to very often side with police. We've had several recent police killings in Chicago. How has Rahm Emanuel defended police? And has he paid any attention to the concerns of ordinary people in Chicago?
Well, Rahm is possessed of a particular arrogance that he doesn't feel that he has to defend the police. You know, and we can't even talk about violence, about reducing it, until we talk about the corrupt tree that produces it. And so that corrupt tree, for example, Sonali, is when we were looking for a new police superintendent by law, you know, we had a national search, thousands of taxpayer dollars went into that. Then we had three rigorously vetted candidates and that were known as reformed law enforcement executives. But Rahm didn't want pushback from any superintendent. So this, again, exemplifies the corruption in Chicago that breeds the violence. He then suspends the law, and literally flushes thousands of taxpayer dollars down the drain. And he suspends the law in city council for one day, and he pulls in a man who I went to grammar school and high school with, so this isn't easy, and Eddie Johnson, who did not apply for the job, nor showed any interest in the job, and he appoints him superintendent. And then my alumnus makes the statement, you know, because he's Black, and he says, I've never seen discrimination on the Chicago Police Department during my career. And I'm like, alumnus, no, because you're sending officers to racial sensitivity training. How can you say something like that? So right. Examples like that.
Please now, of course, the Chicago police has been under scrutiny for a lot of misconduct in as one of his last acts in office. President Obama's government released a federal investigation report into Chicago Police Department. I understand there's just been a consent decree. So it's not as though the conduct of the Chicago Police Department has escaped federal investigators, right?
And with the change of administrations, Rahm also changed. He was contrite while the Obama administration was there. Then when you get Beauregard Sessions in, then Rahm pulls back and doesn't do what he's supposed to do. But now because we're in an election year, again, he does the convenient thing. And see, Rahm's need for the convenient thing is absolutely scary because he covered up the murder of Laquan McDonald in order to win his last election. So we're not surprised by this, but it's just appalling.
Right. It took something like 1 year for the police video of Laquan McDonald's killing to be released to the public. The day you and I are speaking on Wednesday, Chicago police just released the video of the killing of a man named Juan Mendez, who the police claim pointed a loaded gun at him. There was the killing of Hereth Augustus as well. And even in the videos that that police release, it's never really obvious that they are facing danger. And yet I watched a video from Emanuel say that it's really important for the community to understand what the police go through when they have to make these quick decisions. He seems to very openly sympathize with police over members of the community. Is that what people get from within Chicago as well?
In Adolf Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, he makes the statement that if you tell a people a lie often enough, they'll believe it's the truth. And I believe that is one of the operating principles of the Emanuel administration. If we lie to them enough, they'll believe it's the truth. You know, Emanuel has been sitting on $500 million of HUD funds that was supposed to be used for low-income housing. People could have had different lives and different circumstances and different outcomes had this money been utilized, but obviously the political will to help the needy is not in this administration. But the $1 billion TIF / slush fund has money going out of it to his developer crony friends. Look, we want Chicago to be continue to be a world-class city. No one's fighting that. But, you know, don't, it's a both and, not an either or. Help those that are needy, do the good things, and find common ground. So maybe your friends don't get as much. And if they don't get as much, that means that the needy will get a lot more.
Now, I understand that you were in the news recently because your march that's to take place on Thursday didn't get the approval of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Do you need Emanuel's approval for a march calling for him to resign?
We don't want Rahm's approval. And really, if he gave it, it would be another lie. And by that, Sonali, what I mean is this. We're calling for his resignation. So how does he back or support something that talks about an end to his regime or sanctions his own termination? You know, how dumb, how naive and gullible and self-hating does he think we are? You know, Jesus said, Satan cannot cast out Satan or he would divide himself and his kingdom would not stand. So again, perpetrating that kind of falsity is typical of this administration. You know, I mean, the wool that is being pulled over the people's eyes, for instance, with the shooting deaths of Quintonio LeGreer and Betty Jones, you know, the officer Robert Realmo, you know, we have IPRA, which was our old civilian accountability mechanism, and it became COPA. And they called it a bad shoot. They called it an unjustified shooting. And then Eddie Johnson, Superintendent Johnson, calls it a good shooting. He had promised us transparency, but it doesn't even mean anything in terms of what COPA says or what the people say. And so this kind of, you know, we know they didn't start the corruption in Chicago, but we cannot allow them to perpetuate it. This tyranny must end.
Tell us about the march on Thursday and what I mentioned a summary of the demands that you have put out. Let's tell us a little bit more about what you want and where the march is set to go through.
Well, let me give you the route very quickly. You know, Thursday, August 2nd, we're going to be staging at Belmont and Lakeshore Drive. You won't be able to miss this. It's in the northbound Lakeshore Drive entrance ramp to Belmont. And we're going to meet at 4 o'clock, and then we will go walk onto Lakeshore Drive, all four lanes, and block traffic there. We're doing this on a weekday, during rush hour, before a Cubs game, during Lollapalooza. We want to be disruptive. And then we'll stand out there, we'll block the traffic, lie down, sit down, stand on our heads, whatever it takes. And then we will then go back on Belmont, walk west, and we'll walk west on Belmont, then we'll turn right going north to Wrigley Field. And because in Wrigley Field are multi-million dollar ball players holding the same kind of bat that was held by Quintonio LeGreer, but with very, very different outcomes. And let me say this, Sonali. And see, this is happening for us at a very special time. August 5th, 52 years ago, Martin Luther King marched through Marquette Park here in Chicago. And it was a hostile environment, so hostile, in fact, that he was hit in the head with a brick and went down, knocked him to his knees. Fortunately, at that point, he was not permanently injured, killed, or something of that nature. And then September 2nd, he marched in Cicero, Illinois, another hostile environment. And it was over the brutal beating death of a young teenager named Jerome Huey by a vicious white mob. And again, there was no strategizing with the police department to do any of these marches. There was no approval by City Hall. You know, a matter of factly, Martin imitates his namesake, Martin Luther, who 500 years ago went to the church in Wittenberg and nailed his 95 theses, which is part of the whole Protestant Reformation, right? And he goes to Richard J. Daley's City Hall on July 10th, 1966, and he pins the demands of the people there. And something we're planning on doing tomorrow morning is going down the City Hall, the fifth floor, and we're going to tape, you know, we have marble now, and he had wood back there, we can't nail him. We're going to tape, you know, the demands to Rahm Emanuel's door that morning, because we're marching that evening to have leverage, to have power, you know, to have, show organized power with the people coming together. This March Thursday is about creating a platform for the people of Chicago that want to come out and to lift their voices and to put our minds and our spirits and our bodies together to show that we aren't taking this anymore.
So you mentioned that you and others will be blocking streets. So there are people that are preparing to be arrested, because you're doing the march also at a very busy time in the middle of the city on very busy streets. So people will be arrested.
Yes, they can arrest us. And again, Martin King also derives so many things that he did from Mahatma Gandhi. And one of the ideas is, now, to be at the march, you know, Thursday, you're not required to be arrested or to go to jail. But for those who do, philosophically, we're in the same place as Dr. King. And by that, I mean, we want to fill the jails if that's what it takes. Because once you fill the jails, what then do they do with the rest of us?
So the march demands include, as I said, accountability for police killings, but also addressing economic issues. And you mentioned the fact that Rahm Emanuel seems to be in the pocket of Chicago developers. There's also demand around schools, so public education. How do you link police violence in the Black community and, you know, communities of color in general with the sort of lack of economic investment in poor neighborhoods and the closing of public schools? Those are all part of the same issue?
Without a doubt. For instance, we talk about reopening, repurposing the public school buildings that were shut down, you know, and the largest shutdown in terms of the number of 50 schools in the history of the United States, which then destabilized neighborhoods. And so what we're saying is, you know, we want big companies to come in and employ our citizens like Google and or the Amazons, but these companies are also coming in because they're getting tax incentives and things, tax abatements to draw them in. And so in the end, the taxpayers are actually subsidizing them being here. Well, these cash-rich companies, we live in the 21st century, of course. They can take these buildings and create like digital training centers in these neighborhoods and help to restabilize them. The kids born in the 21st century, technology is normative to them. Let them learn how to code. Let them learn how to repair things like that. And you can hire people from the neighborhood. They don't have to have PhDs. We need people that can do things like clean and cook and all various kind of things that have to be done that a computer can't do in these schools, and thereby revitalizing. And but there has to be the political will to do that. And so, and if there is no political will, one of the reasons we're marching on Thursday is to forge political will.
How big a crowd do you estimate will show up? There have been lots of protests in Chicago just in the past several weeks and months around individual police killings. Do you hope that all of those people that showed up, you know, relatives and friends and community members of people killed by police, as well as the sort of broader community, is going to show up sort of under one banner on Thursday?
Yes, indeed. We hope that everyone comes out, you know, all people of faith and goodwill will come out and say, look, you know, we have to do this together. There are no big eyes and little U's at this march on Thursday. It is about a platform. Look, you know, I tell my church, Sonali, that we're all just above ground dirt and we eat dirt to stay out of the dirt, right? So Chicago is one big body, but you cannot get diseased or become ill in one part of your body and ignored and neglected and not expect the other parts to suffer as well, because if you're ignoring and neglecting that. And so we're starting to see violence happen in areas that heretofore were safe. And so, you know, we have to, it is a whole body situation here. Look, Lakeview and Wrigleyville are beautiful and great places. I want to bring Southsiders and Westsiders and Purses, you know, my co-organizer, T.O. Hardiman, he's doing an incredible job. We're working together, you know, up there so they can see what a well-funded neighborhood looks like. so they can see what an optimally functioning public safety arm is like and how they treat their citizens, so that when they go back home, now they have a different level of dissatisfaction and they can say, wait a minute, I've always thought this is the way it's supposed to be, but it's not. Because from my own experience as a black kid, my parents are from the South, I'm first generation Chicagoan, I was scared to go downtown as a kid for various reasons. And there are many people in challenged communities and major urban centers across the country and the world that never go to the elite places to see some of the heights that humanity can reach. And I believe that's intentional. So we want to help change that. Now, if the residents of Lakeview and Wrigleyville, the Gold Coast, want to stage a march and march through Austin and Inglewood and Lawndale, some of these challenged communities, I got to tell you, they would be more than welcome. And just show us how you get the money to do these things and fix these things up, and show us how, you can get the police officers not to profile you every time you walk out the house. Come on. But since I doubt if they're going to come to us, we're going to them.
How different is Rahm Emanuel's approach under Trump compared to under Obama? You mentioned that in the early part of the interview, and it feels like, it's not like Rahm Emanuel is a Democrat. He's an Obama Democrat. One would imagine that he would defend his city with greater gusto under Trump. But in a way, from what you said, it sounds as though Trump and Jeff Sessions have freed him to be even more pro-police. And, this may be one of the reasons why people get so disillusioned by even Democrats.
Well, there was a time when Democrats protected people. Now we protect feelings. But I look at people before I look at their labels, because labels can be deceiving or intending to deceive. And Rahm and his brothers, Ario on the West Coast, who has raised about $30 million for him coming through PACs, his brother Ezekiel, the doctor on the East Coast, Rahm here in the Midwest and his DC connections, they have created the Machiavellian empire and they have built something here. But they are concerned about the almighty dollar, even if it destroys people who have been so broken and beaten down, betrayed, that they don't have the strength to defeat themselves. So we have a formidable foe here, one who has a plan. But when people say, well, it's going to be impossible, I always tell them, something is impossible until somebody does it, until it happens. Ask the Wright brothers, And so you don't stop. You just keep pressing. We have things we're planning after this. Our demands, we need to create leverage in order to get our demands. We don't want to have chit chats with messengers. We need to sit with the decision makers and have transformative and transactional conversations for the good of the public, not just the good of the few, the private people, the elite people.
So finally, what comes after the march then? Marches are a great way to bring people together to raise the issues, but of course, they're usually just part of grassroots strategies, right?
Right. But, coming together allows us to bring people together who might not have met under other circumstances. And there's a synergy that comes out of there and creativity that happens in those kind of events. But we want to create the infrastructure where people will be able to follow through on these impulses to do that, which is good. Now we can't give away everything. We're like a football team. We have to huddle, because if we tell the defense what the play is going to be, they're going to stop us, because they're formidable. I admit that, but we're bigger and we're right. And so we're going to be doing things like, in terms of, if they still pretend don't want to listen to us, and the oppressor's trick is to outlast the oppressed because of their superior resources and positioning. But if we have spirit power to continue, and because the idea is we have to inspire the uninspired. And when the uninspired, the jaded, the hurt, the broken, the downtrodden, when their spirits are ignited, watch out, you're talking about a revolt of the spirit. One of the things we're looking at doing, the Jason Van Dyke trial starts September 5th, over the execution of Laquan McDonald, right? 16 shots in the cover up. And we want to take the Jerome Huey death that Martin marched on 52 years ago. We want to take that and bring Laquan McDonald and Jerome Huey together and use that historical context and where we are now and to synergize, create a way to go against these diabolical persons.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Reverend Livingston. Can you let us know where people can find out more about your organization, the Coalition for a New Chicago?
Two places. One place on Facebook, you can go to the Coalition for a New Chicago, and also ByRom 2019. That's BYE like ByRom, ByRom 2019 on Facebook, both.
And we'll link to both of those from our website. Good luck at the march, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Reverend Gregory C. Livingston is the president and CEO of the Coalition for a New Chicago. We've been discussing an anti-violence march he's organizing on Thursday in Chicago. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter and also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.